Who remembers something from yesterday regarding what we were reading and hearing about?
Comes to his transformational experience.
But not to the very core of his being.
Unfortunately.
Fortunately, unfortunately. Very difficult to tell.
Very difficult.
Yes. You remember anything else? She had a transformational experience also. And very deep. Very good. Anyone else remember anything?
Comes to think that
oh. What else did he do? They persecuted everyone, including the Vaishnavas.
Yeah.
Especially the Vaishnavas. They had the ability to take on any form that they desired. Killed cows, brahmanas. In this way they were hoping to crush culture and crush, thereby crush Vishnu. So then, meanwhile, already Vasudeva had taken Krishna to Gokul and had brought back Yogamaya, and Yogamaya had escaped when Kamsa had tried to kill her. And now Krishna was on the other side of the river. So, Sukadeva Goswami said, now we're in the next chapter, chapter 5, and in this chapter, Nanda Maharaj will go to Mathura, and he will meet Vasudeva there. And then, in the very next chapter, the first of the demons who Kamsa sent, Putana, she will be killed by Krishna, and then Nanda Maharaj will return from Mathura. But now we will hear the ceremony that was celebrated. Sukadeva Goswami said, Nanda Maharaj was naturally very magnanimous. And when Lord Sri Krishna appeared as his son, he was overwhelmed by jubilation. Therefore, after bathing and purifying himself and dressing himself properly, he invited brahmanas who knew how to recite the Vedic mantras. After having these qualified brahmanas recite auspicious Vedic hymns, he arranged to have the Vedic birth ceremony celebrated for his newborn child according to the rules and regulations. And he also arranged for worship of the demigods and forefathers. I'll read some of Prabhupada's purport here. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has discussed the significance of the word Nandastu. The word two, he says, is not used to fulfill the sentence because without two, the sentence is complete. Nandas tu atmaja utpane. Therefore, the word two is used for a different purpose. Yes, it's indeed translated as indeed. Because without two, different purpose, although Krishna appeared as the son of Devaki, Devaki and Vasudeva did not enjoy the Jatakarma, the festival of the birth ceremony. Instead, the ceremony was enjoyed by Nanda Maharaj, as stated here, Nandas Tvatmaja Utpane Jata Lado Mahamana. When Nanda Maharaj met Vasudeva, Vasudeva could not disclose, your son Krishna is actually my son. You are his father in a different way, spiritually. Because of fear of Kamsa, Vasudeva could not observe the festival for Krishna's birth. Nanda Maharaj, however, took full advantage of this opportunity. Such an interesting viewpoint is that to perform the ceremony caused them great happiness. So many blessings would come to the child. And Nanda Maharaj, being magnanimous in heart, would take advantage of the ceremony to give so much away in charity. And it was considered such a a great misfortune for Vasudev, something he will lament about later, that he could not either celebrate the birth, other than mentally, birth of Krishna, nor could he have the pleasure of nurturing Krishna in his pastimes of childhood. But especially the ceremonial part of the culture was very strong, and to perform these ceremonies brought great happiness to the persons. Very, very different from the contemporary culture, which it tends to be ceremonyless. Mm. And why, what is the mood that people have about ceremonies and rituals? I heard one word that might be the... super, but superficial. And you'd say, it's only a ritual. That's what you usually say before, it's a ritual. But actually rituals are extremely important for culture and also for society. They're very important.
Mm.
And unites the community also, and the culture, the society through the culture. The Jatakarma ceremony can take place when the umbilical cord connecting the child and the placenta is cut. But there's some problem with that with Krishna's birth. What was that?
The placenta.
And no umbilical cord, because Krishna at least. But this is another example, a reason that's given here by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. What does he prove by this? However, since Krishna was brought by Vasudev to the house of Nanda Maharaj, where was the chance for this cutting of the umbilical cord to happen? In this regard, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur desires to prove with evidence from many shastras that Krishna actually took his birth as the son of Yashoda before the birth of Yogamaya. Because they would have noticed, this is very peculiar, that we haven't cut the cord, but the cord's cut.
Mm.
Even though there may be doubts about the cutting of the umbilical cord, and even though it is possible that this was not done, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears, because then one could also ask, and how did Yogamaya get across to the other side of the river too, without a cord being cut? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur desires the proof of evidence for many shastras that Krishna actually took his birth as the son of Yashoda before the birth of Yogamaya, who is therefore described as the Lord's younger sister, Anuja. Even though there may be doubts about the cutting of the umbilical cord, even though it is possible that this was not done, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears, such events are regarded as factual. Krishna appeared as Varahadev from the nostril of Brahma, and therefore Brahma is described as the father of Varahadeva. Also significant are the words Karayam Asha Vidihat, being overwhelmed with jubilation over the birth of his son, because Nanda Maharaj was quite old already. It's interesting when the different brothers of Nanda Maharaj are described. His older brother, whose name is what? Upananda. His hair is white colored already. And his younger brother, he has two younger brothers, I think. What is it? Sunanda and their beards are blackish color, because they're younger brothers. And Nanda Maharaj's beard is mixed, like salt and pepper. So he, because he was quite elderly when Krishna was born, it was considered a special benediction upon him to have a son. Nanda Maharaj did not see, because he was overwhelmed with jubilation, whether the cord was cut or not. Thus he performed the ceremony very gorgeously. According to the opinion of some authorities, Krishna was actually born as the son of Yashoda. In any case, without regard for material understandings, we can accept that Nanda Maharaj's celebration for the ceremony of Krishna's birth was proper. This ceremony is therefore well known everywhere as Nandotsava. So that, of course, we also know that day as the appearance day for the Buddha. Nanda Maharaj, okay, listen to this. Nanda Maharaj gave in charity how many cows? I'll give you a hint. It's more than 20. More than 120.
64 lakhs.
More than 64 lakhs. No. 2 million. 2 million cows in charity. And they each were decorated with cloth and jewels. He gave that in charity to the Brahmins. He also, so how is this possible? Even Nanda Maharaj had 900,000 cows, and he gave away 2 million. But where did they all graze? So this question was brought up. And then how do you give away 2 million cows? Where are the Brahmins going to put them? But all these things are very easily possible in Brajabhumi, which is not only infinite, but amongst all the infinite Vaikuntha planets, it's the biggest. So there's a lot of inconceivable things, because how could one infinite be bigger than another infinite? But it is the biggest of all the infinite Vaikuntha planets. So these cows, all this is easily possible for Vrindavan. Easily possible, because Vrindavan is so unlimited, completely unlimited. He also gave them 7 hills of grains, covered with jewels and with cloth decorated with golden embroidery. So this was how he expressed his happiness. The happiness inside is expressed externally by being magnanimous and giving in charity. So this is also true for those who are spiritually advanced. Their happiness inside causes them to be magnanimous outside. And what does that mean when they're magnanimous outside? Is that they're charitably disposed in giving away Krishna consciousness and spiritual life. And what is the cause of miserliness? It's just the opposite. When one doesn't feel one has enough, then one isn't so inclined to give. And if one has, it's so much a product of the mind that when, no matter how much one has, either if one has an improper mind, one won't wish to be magnanimous. O King, by the passing of time, land and other material possessions are purified. By bathing, the body is purified. And by being cleansed, unclean things are purified. By purificatory ceremonies, birth is purified. By austerity, the senses are purified. And by worship and charity offered to the Brahmins, material possessions are purified. By satisfaction, the mind is purified. And by self-realization of Krishna consciousness, the soul is purified. What does it mean when we say the soul is purified? Because the soul is not in touch with matter, in fact. So it is always free from matter. It is always free from contamination. So how can it be purified?
In the middle of a cavern.
Yeah, simple. Yeah, just the illusory identification with matter, which covers the consciousness, is removed. That's by purification. So by the passing of time, what's purified? Land and other material possessions. By bathing, the body is purified. By being cleansed, unclean things are purified. By purificatory ceremonies, birth is purified. By austerity, the senses are purified. by worship and charity offered to the Brahmins, material possessions are purified. By satisfaction, the mind is purified. Now that's
just the opposite way we think of it. We think, well, first I want to get what the mind wants, and then I'll be satisfied. But here, Sukadeva is saying that the mind is satisfied. That causes the purification of the mind,
just by being satisfied.
How to be satisfied?
You have to define satisfaction.
Okay, go ahead.
Well,
get it.
Because if you have a misconception about what's going to satisfy you, it won't purify the mind. You need to attain it.
No, but this is by the satisfaction.
Yeah, but so if you have a deeply spiritual experience which is deeply satisfying, the mind becomes pure and uplifted.
Okay, but this is the cause of satisfaction. Satisfaction is the cause of the purification, not the something else is the cause of the satisfaction.
Well, it's satisfaction of heart, so it's not satisfaction centered in the mind.
Okay, let's see what word is used here. Santushtya, just by satisfaction, the mind becomes purified. Santushtya.
So what does it mean to be satisfied? What is the meaning of that? Because that's something that we all have to confront. What does it mean that satisfaction purifies the mind?
We're not swayed by happiness or distress, but two things are both and are equal in both.
Then
the satisfaction comes. The mind can
But this is saying that if you're satisfied, then you're equal. Not that if you're equal, you're satisfied.
If you attain a satisfaction that's deeper than a mental conception, then the flow through is that the mind becomes purified and uplifted.
But there's something maybe a little simpler that it's saying without the then. Because we're all saying, well, this happens, then the mind is satisfied. But what the point is actually that the mind can never be satisfied with anything that happens externally, because it's the very nature of the mind, because it wants something, and wanting is born of the motive passion. So passion leads to an increase of desires. It doesn't lead to satisfaction. So the point being, whatever it is that's there on the material level, or on any level you could say, if the mind just accepts, okay, this is I should be happy with what I have, whatever it is on whatever level, then that brings satisfaction, that acceptance of what, as they say nowadays, what is. That's what brings satisfaction, because otherwise the mind can't be satisfied, because it's the nature of the mind is chanchanam astiram, is unsteady, it's flickering, it's always wanting, it's always pushing, it's always satisfied. What to speak of when the mind is pushed by the lower modes of material nature. It just tortures everyone. Literally, it tortures everyone. And I mean to say everyone, because when we're tortured, we torture everyone else. So it's the mind like getting its revenge on the universe. So what would happen if we just accepted at a certain level, whatever our situation is, what our karma is? It's first of all, if there's unpleasantness in it, it's not that we're innocent victims. But this is what Krishna's giving us by his kindness. And if we became satisfied, because all the strivings of the mind come from the motive passion, and all the lamentings of the mind come from the mode of ignorance. So, in the mode of goodness, when the mind is in the mode of goodness, then it's satisfied. So this is what the mode of goodness is. It's an acceptance. Neither desiring nor lamenting. What do you think of that? Very easy, yeah? if the mind is in the mode of goodness, it's very easy, but Kali Yuga, so much contamination of the other modes of material nature, that practically defines what a human being is in this loka, this planetary system. The demigods are in the mode of goodness, the human beings are in the mode of passion. Advanced in the mode of passion. So passion means distress, because the mind is filled with so much turbulence and desires. So if we simply accept our circumstances, we can just convince the mind to accept the circumstances and stay with reality, then it becomes peaceful. Now, one could answer, one could respond and by not accepting this and say that if we just accepted our circumstances, there would be no progress. There would be no progress on the material level and also on the spiritual level. So on the material level, how would we respond to that? If people say if we're just satisfied, how would we won't make any advancement on the material level? How would we respond to that? Oh, it's easy if we say, how would Prabhupada respond to that? The first word he would say is probably rascal. And Peter, what would he say after he said rascal?
Nonsense, rascal.
In what sense? And then what would he say? How would he explain
what is
it?
Progress?
What is this progress you are making? Because we actually think we're making progress, what progress we have made? In what sense have we made progress? Instead of running on four legs, we run on four wheels. But just the same.
Yeah,
and certainly you can't measure the progress in terms of peacefulness or happiness.
Or the crime rate.
Or the crime rate, or the drug rate, or the peacefulness and family rate, or what's the measurement of happiness that people give when they say that we're making progress?
I'd like to say that there's less poor people. I'd like to say they're dealing with problems like starvation, but they're very even fewer than these people.
People have
GDP. GDP? What is that? Gross
domestic product.
Gross. That's truly what goes on, a very gross domestic product. You're right.
That if people are being fed and if they've got good access to health support, then they should be, and if they've got a job, they should be happy.
What to speak of, they can travel around the world so easily now. There's so many places that people used to just never see.
Yeah. But travel is just restlessness and consciousness. Prabhupada talked about that, and also even Confucius said that. He said people would be so satisfied where they are that they wouldn't even go to the next village. What to speak of to go to the Hawaii or somewhere else just to find the same old things there. So funny when you see see these luxurious travel pictures of places that you've been already, and they just look so, doesn't look romantic at all if you've already seen it. So as you're always saying, it's that the happiness is the anticipation.
Mm.
And then talking about it when you get back to it, making your friends feel envious. That also I have done, you have not done.
You have not seen.
Oh,
cool.
Yeah. And then showing them the slideshows when you get back so you can put everyone to sleep.
And my wife got that, what's that, swine flu? And my children had a little bit of a problem with their teeth, but other than that it was wonderful.
So what do we think? Do we really think we're making progress? I mean, so much pollution, so that you could say the progress is in the transportation, but there's so much pollution because of it. So there's, for every bit of progress, there's so much suffering attached to it. And the internet, of course, that's the communication. That's we've made progress in that. But for every one email you send out to someone that you want to send out, you get 15 back that you didn't want. So that's another. So there's so much anxiety attached to that, and instead of having, in the primitive times, people only had, when we were growing up, there was only a 21-inch, we had one of the first 21-inch color TVs, and we could get maybe in New York, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, it was quite a lot, almost 12 and 13, about 10, 12 channels. But now.
More than New Zealand, go.
Even now, huh? And you don't watch any of them. What to do? Well, that was New York. But nowadays, people aren't satisfied with that, you know. The big dishes, you have 100. So that's what Bali Maharaj, that's what Vamana Dev told Bali Maharaj, that if I'm not satisfied with 3 steps of land, I won't be satisfied if I have the whole universe. And if you're not satisfied with 10 TV stations, you won't be satisfied if you have 110. And people do have 110. And the poor kids become so overwhelmed with all the stimulation. They just move from one to the next, to the next, to the next, and they can't even sit. Their minds are so unpeaceful. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that was... Boy, that's your point. I just gave away the truth. That's all they have. That was like the most exercise people got. But nowadays, you don't even get that.
Progress.
Yeah, progress. And then we'll be back into, what is it called, Farmville again, if we keep on going on this track.
Farmville and Guitar Hero and, what's the third one? Grand Auto Theft.
So when people do these things, I mean, they just, you know, all the virtual, you know, because everyone has mixed natures, okay. So Bhagavad Gita says you control the lower self by the higher self. But what these things do is this grand auto theft and things like that, a game like that, or some war of worlds where you get to shoot everyone or whatever, take over the world or whatever. It just stimulates the insane false ego. And they wonder why there's more crime and why there's more this and more that and things that they want to say. So they want the heads of the tails. And because the symptom of Kali Yuga is people don't want to accept the way that the spiritual, the way that Krishna says to do things, the simple living, the high thinking. So they have a better way to do everything. But there's such bad results when you use the tractors,
there's one result, so you don't have the cow dung anymore, so okay, we'll find a way around that. So we'll use petrochemical fertilizers, and when we use petrochemical fertilizers, you get apples this big that taste like potatoes. And then but the ground turns into desert.
Salt comes up.
And the salt comes up, and the tube wells when there's no rain, so there's such a bad reaction, and the promise of science and going this way against the simple way of that Krishna has prescribed, that we do things through sacrifice, etc. The promise is that through science we will circumvent all the bad things, and we will gain a better life for everyone, a good life. But the bugs increase, the pesticides, you have to use more crazy poisonous pesticides to keep the bugs away, and the bugs get stronger, and more and more poisons have to be put in the food. So it really, no one wants to admit that it actually didn't work, this way of doing things.
Accidentally destroy the climate.
Yeah. And now they have space tourism, but you're not satisfied going. All the planets on Earth aren't enough for you to be dissatisfied with. So now you can go in space. Why? Just say, you know where I've been this weekend? Hawaii? No. You have photo? I've been in outer space.
I knew that for a long time.
Imagine.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, cool.
What did that doctor say to you? The one who was checking you out in the hospital? It's like such a weird world nowadays. Anyway, this is something different. By satisfaction, the mind is purified, and by self-realization of Krishna consciousness, the soul is purified. By atmama, atma atma vidyaya, by self-realization, the soul itself is purified. Prabhupada's purport. There are Shastric injunctions concerning how one can purify everything according to Vedic civilization. Unless purified, anything we use will infect us with contamination. In India, 5,000 years ago, even in the villages, such as that of Nandamaraj, people knew how to purify things, and thus they enjoyed even material life without contamination. So that's actually the answer to the question that God made a system that no one could be happy, but actually he made a system where people can be happy even in the material world by living in the mode of goodness. Not eternally, but he's given them the facility by following his instructions. So then, while the ceremony was going on, who remembers what Nanda Maharaj gave in charity to the Brahmins?
Mm-hmm.
And what did they look like?
Yeah,
because even just by remembering these things, it makes the mind peaceful and happy. He also gave them 7 hills of grain covered with jewels and the cloth decorated with golden embroidery. The Brahmins recited auspicious Vedic hymns, and the atmosphere becomes so auspicious when these are purified, when these hymns are recited, which purify the environment by their vibration, which is very obvious, clear, when it happens. The experts in reciting old histories like the Puranas, the experts in reciting the histories of royal families, and general reciters all chanted, while singers sang and many kinds of musical instruments like bhedis and dundubis played in accompaniment, different types of auspicious drums. Even now, at the inaugurations of the presidents of the United States, they play this heavy rock music.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Not very auspicious, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So Brajapur, the residence of Nanda Maharaj, was fully decorated with varieties of festoons and flags, and in different places gates were made with varieties of flower garlands, pieces of cloth, and mango leaves. The courtyards, the gates near the roads, and everything within the rooms of the houses were perfectly swept and washed with water. The cows, the bulls, and the calves were thoroughly smeared with a mixture of turmeric and oil, mixed with varieties of minerals. Their heads were bedecked with peacock feathers, and they were garlanded and covered with cloth and golden ornaments. All these auspicious items. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has instructed us in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna Goratsavani Lam Vaisakama Savavadam. Farming, cow protection, and trade are the qualities of work for the Vaisyas. Nanda Maharaj belonged to the Vaisya community, the agriculturalist community. How to protect the cows and how rich this community was are explained in these verses. We could hardly imagine that cows, bulls, and calves could be cared for so nicely and decorated so well with cloths and valuable golden ornaments. How happy they were. Who was happy? The cows, the bulls, the calves, because they were treated with actual love and affection, and they knew that. And therefore the bulls would work for their masters. It was completely natural because of the affection they were treated with. And the cows would reciprocate by giving so much milk, and the calves would just jump around happily. How happy they were.
So one would think, in the way that contemporaries think, how happy the animals were. Some people think, well, so what? Who cares? Big deal. But actually, the society was so nice that the animals were happy. What to speak of the people? The animals were so happy. And people might say that about the cows, but when it comes to their pet dogs, they're always trying to make their dogs happy. Because it's just natural for a good soul to want everyone who he comes in contact with to be happy. This was the culture.
How happy they were. As described elsewhere in the Bhagavatam, during Maharaj Yudhisthira's time, the cows were so happy that they used to muddy the pasturing ground with milk. This is Indian civilization. Yet in the same place, India, Bharatvarsha, how much people are suffering by giving up the Vedic way of life and not understanding the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. O King Parikit, the cowherd men dressed very opulently with valuable ornaments and garments such as coats and turbans. Decorated in this way and carrying various presentations in their hands, they approached the house of Nanda Maharaj. So this we could go into an interesting topic with this up. When people go to temples nowadays, even people from India in the West, they just wear their jeans and their regular clothes and like that. They don't, because they don't think they're going somewhere special, but the mood in worshipping the deity should be like when you go to see the king. Someone who's very, very important. You put on your best clothes, and you present yourself very in your best. Put on your ornaments, etc. It's just completely natural. But people don't do this. and they put on their ornaments, garments, and coats, and turbans. So in the old, in the older culture, and that the people, the men, they would always wear a turban. I'm not sure the philosophical reason or anything. It must be something other than cultural.
You could tell a person's rank by the turban. You never showed their hair, and
but why would everyone wear a turban? But why? That's what is respectful. We don't have that. That part of the culture is there.
Well, even in English culture, you always had to wear a hat when I was growing up. You didn't cover your hair. And even in Jewish culture, you cover your hair. I don't know the exact reason, but when I was growing up, if I went to church,
well,
I had
the
to wear a hat. If I went to the city, I had to wear a hat. I couldn't go to the city without hat on and gloves.
That was 400 years ago.
But, you know, that's how I remember that. That's
really? Well, that's really British culture, isn't it, Galaji? I remember when...
Yeah. Because the Queen did it.
Yeah,
because it's culture.
You don't show your knees and things, and then all of a sudden, boom, there it was.
Boing.
70. You're always like, gosh. Somebody did it at a race meeting. A famous model went wearing a short skirt, and that was the beginning of it all.
Yeah.
In Australia.
But there's, one time I saw this video, that it showed that the cigarette producers in the, I can't remember what year it was, like 1920, they were trying to figure out how to increase sales. So one brilliant, who's actually in the United States, but a relative of Freud, he figured out all you have to do is get the ladies to smoke, and then you've doubled it right there, because ladies would never ever smoke in public or anything like that. So they waited till some parade was going on, and they hired all these young ladies, socialites, to be marching in the parade, and then at a particular command, you know, all the cameras were out and everything like that, all the ladies picked up their skirts and they pulled out cigarettes, a pack of cigarettes from their skirt, they all lit up the cigarettes, and it was such an item that this is what, you know, if you're a modern, liberated lady, this is what you're supposed to do, and sales went up. What could you say? It worked. Because it was such, they were trying to figure out how to put it in the psyche of the lady. In other words, how to exploit the ladies in such a way that our sales could go up. And then after a while, they wanted to do that even more. So then they target teenagers and kids. How to get the kids to smoke. So it's, This is Kali Yuga. What to speak of wearing gloves and a hat?
This is just good marketing. This is just good advertising. Good intelligent marketing.
This is progress.
Mm.
But we'd have to ask ourselves, is
getting rid of the old fashions.
Is smoking actual progress? Not if you read what, if you look at what's on the cigarette packages, it isn't. And one of the amazing things is that it's on the cigarette packages. It doesn't stop cigarette sales at all. the mind is just as attracted as ever.
So this is a different universe over here. The cowherd men dressed very opulently with valuable ornaments and garments such as coats and turbans. Decorated in this way and carrying various presentations in their hands, they approached the house of Nanda Maharaj. Purport. When we consider the past condition of the agriculturalist in the village, we can see how opulent he was, the agriculturalist, simply because of agricultural produce and protection of cows. At the present, however, agriculture having been neglected and cow protection given up, the agriculturalist is suffering pitiably and dressed in a niggardly torn cloth. This is the distinction between the India of history and the India of the present day. By the atrocious activities of Ugra Karma, how we are killing the opportunity of human civilization. These are some of the last things that Prabhupada wrote. It's very heartfelt. Because Prabhupada was at a, he saw that he was alive in the 1800s, in the late 1800s, he saw a society, a culture that we never, that none of us have even glimpsed of. The gopi wives of the cowherd men were very pleased to hear that Mother Yasoda had given birth to a son, and they began to decorate themselves very nicely with proper dresses, ornaments, black ointment for their eyes, and so on. Vastra kalpa anjana adivi. Their lotus-like faces were extraordinarily beautiful, being decorated with saffron and newly grown kunkum. The wives of the cowherd men hurried to the house of Mother Yasoda with presentations in their hands. The cowherd men and women in the village lived a very natural life. So Prabhupada in different places in the Bhagavatam speaks in cultural Vanashrama type of terms. The cowherd men and women in the village lived a very natural life, and the women developed natural feminine beauty. Because women in modern civilization do not live naturally, they do not develop properly. Because of artificial living, women have lost their natural beauty, although they claim to be independent and advanced in material civilization. This description of the village women gives a clear example of the contrast between natural life and the artificial life of a condemned society, such as that of the Western countries, where topless, bottomless beauty may be easily purchased in clubs and shops and for public advertisement. The word Bhalibi indicates that the women were carrying gold coins, jeweled necklaces, nice cloth, newly grown grass, sandalwood pulp, flower garlands, and similar offerings on plates made of gold. Such offerings are called bali. The word tvaritam zagmu indicates how happy the village women were to understand that Mother Yasoda had given birth to a wonderful child known as Krishna. In the ears of the gopis were brilliantly polished jeweled earrings, and from their necks hung metal lockets. Their hands were decorated with bangles, their dresses were of varied colors, and from their hair, flowers fell into the street like showers. Thus, while going to the house of Nanda Maharaj, the gopis, their earrings and garlands moving, were brilliantly beautiful. Offering blessings to the newborn child, Krishna, the wives and daughters of the cowherd men said, "May you become the king of Braja and long maintain all its inhabitants." They sprinkled a mixture of turmeric powder, oil, and water upon the birthless Supreme Lord and offered their prayers. Now that the all-pervading unlimited Krishna, the master of the cosmic manifestation, had arrived within the estate of Maharaj Nanda, various types of musical instruments resounded to celebrate the great festival. And gladness, the cowherd men enjoyed the great festival by splashing one another's body with a mixture of curd, condensed milk, butter, and water. They threw butter on one another and smeared it on one another's bodies. Purport. From this statement, we can understand that 5,000 years ago, not only was there enough milk, butter, and curd to eat, drink, and cook with, but when there was a festival, it would be thrown about without restriction. There was no limit to how extensively milk, butter, curd, and other products were used in human society. Everyone had an ample stock of milk, and by using it, many varied milk preparations, people would be kept in good health in natural ways and thus enjoy life in Krishna consciousness. The great-minded Maharaj Nanda gave clothing, ornaments, and cows in charity to the cowherd men in order to please Lord Vishnu, and thus he improved the condition of his own son in all respects. He distributed charity to the Sutras, the Magadhas, the Vandis, and the men of all other professions according to their education or qualification, and he satisfied everyone's desires. The most fortunate Ohini, the mother of Baladev, was honored by Nanda Maharaj in Yashoda, and thus she also dressed gorgeously and decorated herself with a necklace, a garland, and other ornaments. She was busy wandering here and there to receive the women who were guests at the festival. Amaraj Prikit, the home of Nanda Maharaj, is eternally the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his transcendental qualities, and it is therefore always naturally endowed with the opulence of all wealth. Yet beginning from Lord Krishna's appearance, it became the place for the pastimes of the goddess of fortune. Purport. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, Lakshmi Sahasra Satasam Brahma Sevyamanam Govinda Madhi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. The abode of Krishna is always served by hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune. Wherever Krishna goes, the goddess of fortune naturally resides with him. The chief of the goddesses of fortune is Srimati Radharani. Therefore, Krishna's appearance in the land of Braj indicated that the chief goddess of fortune, Radharani, would also appear there very soon. Nanda Maharaj's abode was already opulent, and since Krishna had appeared, it would be opulent in all respects. Sukadeva Goswami continued, thereafter, my dear King Prikit, O protector of the Kuru dynasty, Maharaj Nanda appointed the local cowherd men to protect Gokul and then went to Mathura to pay the yearly taxes to King Kamsa. Because the killing of babies was going on by this Putin and had already become known, Nanda Maharaj was very much afraid for his newborn child. Thus he appointed the local cowherd men to protect his home and child. He wanted to go immediately to Mathura to pay the taxes due and also to offer some presentation for the sake of his newborn son. For the protection of the child, he had worshipped various demigods and forefathers, given charity to everyone's satisfaction. Similarly, Nanda Maharaj wanted not only to pay Kamsa his yearly taxes, but also to offer some presentation so that Kamsa too would be satisfied. His only concern was how to protect his transcendental child, Krishna.
Because Putana was on the loose, and she dressed herself as a with matted hair and fierce, and she was wandering around Braja, killing children. But when it came time for her to come to try to kill Krishna, she feared the protective soldiers of Nanda Maharaj that Nanda Maharaj had left in charge, because they had very powerful weapons, because Nanda Maharaj was a devotee of Lord Narayan. So they had Narayan arrows, and she feared that. So she had to think of a different way to enter the town of Braja and to go about her nefarious business there, the town of Vrindavan. So she disguised herself as the most beautiful woman, and the people actually thought that she was Lakshmi Devi herself, but that comes after in the next chapter. Okay, we'll stop here. Any comments, questions? Even we're making progress. But if you look at even Vrindavan, Bhaja Vihari sent me some photos today of what Vrindavan looks like, with the roads all torn up and everything. But the Yamuna's flooded, he said. Well, there's one photo of one place where it was about a mile wide, he thought.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the deities are so beautiful. But going to Thai festival and my sons and that. But so there's a certain, you could say it's opulent, but it's not opulent in the same way. And people are not as more peaceful or happy. Do you remember the first times we went to Yavat Tirthi? They used to have those silver coins embedded in the... Do you remember that? There were silver coins embedded in the marble. And some of them were gone. And now none of them are there. You know, people would do, you know, things were up in it.
But hedonism is so headstrong, you know, that people don't really care. They don't want to talk about these things because they don't want to give up the facility. And anyway, even if you give it up, nobody else will give it up. So it's so headstrong. There's no, you know, there's no sensibleness.
The mode of passion.
And then on the other side, how is it that, you know, devotees use these facilities also and have used them to spread Krishna consciousness, even Srila Prabhupada used them.
And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Tagore, that was one of his main contributions, near Bandha Krishna Sandamanda. And he would drive around in
a
car.
With a
as a sannyasi.
He had upholstered, he wore leather shoes.
Yeah.
So he, you know, he was, but he never ever lost his sentiment to
the center of who everything was meant to please. And then Prabhupada taught us utility is the principle, but purity is the force. And if you just go on the utility as the principle without the purity as the force, then it will sink you.
And you find yourself just swimming alongside all the materialistic people you are and materialistic, with your materialistic desires and wants to be.
It's interesting, there's a society, there's like two different, there's a whole huge segment of society that's dissatisfied with the materialism. Not that they want to give up their ease of living, but they're so dissatisfied with the corporate consciousness and their longing for attains from that way of living, the exploitative, a business model, business orientation. Was everything.
But they haven't got any. They have no. They can't change anything.
Of course.
They want the things of the business.
But they're not willing to give up. Senses, aren't it?
Yeah.
Which is, when you've been brought up a particular way, it's hard to go back to a simple way of living. Yet there's a whole segment of society that's very, very dissatisfied. Very dissatisfied. Yeah.
Who are they?
Well, they're not here. But they're out everywhere.
In Australia, you mean?
Everywhere. Everywhere. Every time they have their G7 conferences and everything, people go and protest in such heavy ways. It's economic, the whole economic measurement of just what you were saying, that as long as we have jobs and etc., not that we're against jobs, but the whole basis for culture being economics. This is clearly a Vaishya mentality. Okay, but Krishna has taken his birth. So that's very positive. And we don't know how things will develop in the future. So we should just do our part now and whatever we've been given to do and see what. See, maybe we'll see, maybe we won't see what Krishna will do with it, what Lord Chaitanya will do with it, the higher powers. Okay, Hare Krishna.